Hello, everybody. Welcome to True Business Stories. Well, Mark, I've mentioned before previously that we've been going for 12 months now. And in fact, it's this Friday, exactly 12 months ago, we posted our first podcast, which was the two of us rambling on. I better go back and listen to it and see what we spoke about.
We just rambled, I think, Bill.
That's right. But boy, have we met some amazing people since that very first episode. And it's a classic of everyone has a story.
Everyone has a story. And as we've said a number of times, the secrets that we find out about people who live and work in Geelong and are running great organisations that sometimes nobody else knows about.
So. Yeah, I think our favourite three expressions that have come out of all these podcasts is sliding doors,
yep.
Tipping point.
Yep.
Right. And where did you start in life? I think that's where it's come from. Anyway, Mark, let's introduce our guest for today.
So I'm really pleased today because our guest is Joe Plummer, who's a director of business in Heels, currently chair of Barwon Water and a myriad other projects. And Joe and I go back a long way. In fact, we won't say how far back we go because that will make us really old. But welcome, Joe.
Welcome to you as well. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, Joe. So let's begin. And the usual starting point for us is, where did you go to primary school?
Wow. Where didn't I go to primary school? So I was a 10-pound POM in 1974. So I kicked off my primary school journey in the UK. And then when we first arrived in Australia, I spent a year or so at Winchelsea Primary School. Then went to Grovedale Primary School and then went to Moolap Primary School. My parents were project people. Okay. So as they sort of moved houses, we moved schools.
Well, that's brilliant. So where did you go to high school? Where did high school kick in?
Well, I went to the very infamous Matthew Flinders Girls High School.
Oh, did you sing in the band?
I did not sing in the band, and there was a good reason for that.
Mark, we interviewed somebody, was it last week, who went to Matthew Flinders?
Yeah, they went to Matthew Flinders, and we asked the same question. Were you in the band? And they said no, but their daughter's there and is in the band.
So. Yeah, wow, okay. I was envious of the people in the band because I certainly do enjoy music, but that was not my – sport was more my forte.
Excellent. Mm. So then what led to – where did you go from there? What did you want to do when you were at school? What was your dream?
So my dream when I was going through school, and we lived on a farm at the time, and so I either thought that I would end up marrying a young farmer and become a farmer's wife, or I would be a primary school teacher. And so I can remember sitting, and this is quite sad really, sitting in one of our sheds at the time, stacking up the hay bales, making a little lectern for me, teaching the hay bales how to do arithmetic.
That's very cool.
Yes, I know. Sad, isn't it?
Well, that's called visualisation.
I think it is today, but I wasn't back then.
And talking about farmers' wives, there's a TV show on at the moment.
Indeed. I missed my time.
So what led, where did you go? What was your, we talk about sliding doors or tipping points.
Yeah.
Something happens that, what was your moment there?
So my moment, I was probably the first in my family to do what was then HSC. And I actually studied pretty hard with that. And as I said, really by that time had thought that I would go to university and become a teacher. But actually, once I finished school and through the machinations of going through school holidays and meeting up with people, I ended up getting a job in the bank. And my family were hard grafters. And so they weren't really of the thought that, you know, you made your way through university to make a success of life. It was about hard work and, you know, just kind of moving one foot in front of the other and away you go from project to project. And so when I got that job in the bank, it was, well, you have a perfectly good job, young lady. I think you should stay there. And I was only not even quite 17 when I finished my VCA. I was quite young, having, you know, started the year earlier because of the trip from Australia or to Australia. Yep. And so I did what I was told. I stayed at the bank. But, of course, I only stayed there 6 months because it was very hierarchical. and that doesn't sit particularly well with me, and certainly very sexist. And I can certainly remember, whilst I quite enjoyed the work and the customers and so forth, I there was a young guy that started at the same time as I did who was certainly no more intelligent than I was. In fact, we'd both done our HSC, and we, you know, our highlight of the day was licking stamps, really, and getting all the post out. And for whatever reason, he managed to get a promotion. And I can remember thinking, well, I know I am a better stamp licker than he is. And so why is that the case? And so, you know, having been made to make the coffee one too many times and not having the favour returned, I decided that that role was not for me. So I moved on.
So that's sort of set a good base in you, because I know how passionate you are about the women and their abilities. So we'll we'll touch on that.
Yes, good.
So from the bank, where then?
So from the bank, I ended up in the building industry. And so I worked for an organisation called Venera Homes, which was down in the bottom of Packington Street, and worked there for quite a few years. And I started off doing their administration, front of desk, then went into accounts and was also doing procurement and ordering, sat in display homes, all those sorts of things. So I've always had the ability to be able to talk to people, and I, you know, I certainly enjoy being around people of all different walks of life. And from there, I ended up applying for a role with Maya as a trainee development manager, which those roles back then were really highly sought after. It was like a 2-year apprenticeship in retail, and you worked on the floor. And so I did that for 2 years, and it was along with sort of management, leadership, sales training, all of those sorts of things. And at the tender age of 20, I ended up managing half of the ground floor in Myer Geelong. And I can remember having a discussion with my manager, and of course, you know, just full of enthusiasm and motivation. He said, "Well, I just don't know what we're going to do with you next." And at that time, somebody had come to me and said, "Well, Target are looking for buyers, trainee buyers. Why don't you put your hat in the ring for that?" So I did. But it was a really big decision for me to do that, because I really loved my job. And I could see there was a career there in stores management and the like. But lo and behold, I put my hand up and got a gig with Target as a trainee buyer. And then, you know, through 20-odd years, worked there in all sorts of different roles, but very much fell in love with business planning and strategy and thinking about how organisations impact, you know, their employees, their stakeholders, their suppliers, you know, the bigger ripple effects of that. So when I finished up there, I was, I think, around 40. That was 15 years ago now. It seems like, you know, yesterday, only yesterday. So still, you know, have very fond memories of those times at Target. It was in its heyday. And had so many incredible experiences, was so lucky to have such an opportunity. Yeah,
And it's interesting when you think the number of people we've chatted to that all went to the bank. That was their starting point, because that was, where do you go if you want a bit of a job? Mm. The bank would take you and train you, and then they'd leave and go elsewhere.
They started doing paper rounds.
Or they started doing paper rounds. Right. But the other interesting thing is the retail groups had fantastic training programs where they would bring in graduates or traineeships. And I don't think that continues these days. I just don't think it exists in the way it used to run.
No. And I can remember, certainly when I was in the building industry, we used to use the Kalamazoo system for accounting, which was not that dissimilar to the buying plans we used to have in retail. Yep. And these things were like a metre long, half a metre wide. You know, they'd have 50 to 100 pages in them, and you would sit on the weekend you know, trying to balance $60 million worth of sales and probably $100 million worth of purchases. And if you were, you know, $1,000 out, you were trying to find it for the weekend, basically. Yep. But brilliant, brilliant sort of foundations.
Yeah, Joe, that's interesting. It takes me back to when I had my company years ago, and I had 40 to 50 employees, and I used the same system for payroll.
Yes.
And of course, in those days, it was clock cards. So you had to sit down on Wednesday night at home and go through every clock card, check every hour, and then enter it all on this crazy big flat board that had all the perforated notches on the top.
Yeah.
And then hope to Christ it all balanced. And then the next day march to the bank and get your notes, coins and all the rest of it, and then go back and divvy it all up into envelopes.
Mm.
So I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
But look, I'd like to just change track for a minute because I know that you've been on a number of boards.
I have.
And one of the issues that Mark and I are passionate about is being on boards, or we've both been on multiple boards. But we often get asked by people that we meet, how do I get on a board? Or you get a call, you know, can you help me get on a board, et cetera. Mm. So, and I have a particular point of view is that you don't just go on a board to learn to be a board member.
Mm.
Yeah, because I think, and particularly with not-for-profits, and I've seen this happen in my church boards and sporting boards I've been on, people go on because they're passionate about a particular subject, but that's not the reason to go on a board.
Mm.
So if we were talking to a group of Year 12 ladies at Matthew Flinders right now and we were talking about the future, what advice would you give them from in a business perspective about a course of action to eventually get onto a board and make a difference?
Well, and I like your end words there. So it is absolutely about making a difference. And whether it's a not-for-profit, you know, a big commercial organisation, it's about the impact you have. And there is certainly nothing wrong with making a dollar. It's how you make it and what you do with it. So my advice to young people would be to have that aspiration and don't wait. You actually don't need to be an executive or a CEO to be able to do that. In fact, we need smart young people on boards with diverse backgrounds. They have an incredible wisdom to offer. And certainly I think that what we need to do is be, whether it's, you know, through government, council, boards, we need young people to do that. And so get yourself a good mentor and start young.
Well, we know a couple of mentors, don't we, Mark?
We do.
But that's really good advice because I think lots of people think, let's wait until I've got a more senior role. And I think if you leave it too late, then it's harder if you start earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I was listening to The Drum a few nights ago and there was a very smart young woman on, and they were talking about the state of mental health in the country at the moment. And they were talking about the lack of psychologists and healthcare and all of those sorts of things. And she just turned the conversation around and said, well, until you fix the systems, until you can put people in a position where young people can pay their bills, where they can buy a home, where they can do all those things that we've been told we could do as the great Australian dream, then people are still going to continue to have mental health problems. So fix the system. And I thought, wow, there's a smart thinker, right? Let's address the root cause problem. So we certainly should not assume that our young people don't have the life's experience to be able to input and make a difference in boards. And the thing about boards is we know that diversity creates better decision making. And so why shouldn't we have young people as part of that voice sitting to the table?
Yeah, and there's lots of courses and programs you can do. I'm not suggesting anyone go out and do a director's course.
I am.
Well, it's a bit confusing having done that and having done this AICD and another one, in that if you're going to start, you know, I believe the place to start, if you're a young adult and you're just starting a family, for instance, I know that life is busy and, you know, it's all about the kids, it's all about sport and rest of it, but the kindergartens need boards, right? The local footy club, the local netball club, all those sorts of things need boards. So that's not a bad place to start, but I do urge people to actually go and do some learning about the protocols of boards and the behaviours, et cetera. And I say at that stage you're not going to go and pay a lot of money to do a course, but there are lots of other programs. But the very first step is to make that step, go and volunteer.
Absolutely.
So after you got out of Target and you started Out of the Box Business Services, which I have to declare an interest because Joe and I were the two that
we
started
it. We were the founders, indeed, yes.
And I do look fondly back on those days because we knew each other through Target days,
we
but we'd never worked closely together.
No, we used to have early morning conversations because you and I were early risers.
Yes.
So we'd share a coffee at 7:30 in the morning and, you know, solve the problems of the day before it began. So, yes, Mark and I did start Out of the Box Business Services together, and we mainly focused on strategy for businesses at that time. And my reason for leaving Target, which, again, loved it until the day I left, was I had been on a program through Target, a professional development program, after having finished an MBA, because I did go to school in my adult life. And part of that leadership program, I met two incredible women. One was Sandra McPhee and the other was Christine Nixon, both who had been on fairly high-powered boards. And at that time at Target, I, you know, had been in the business planning and strategy function, and I was actually charged with a fairly big change program, which was looking at how the organisation brought product from, you know, the early stages of forecasting trends through to, you know, getting it on the floor and out to customers, you know, across a $3.5 billion organisation. And I don't know about anybody else that's done a big change program like that, but it's hard. And I can remember just having that epiphany, you know, listening to those women that, wow, if you really want to change the way organisations do things and their direction, that, you know, I should have a crack at doing it from the board. And having, not long turned 40, finished my MBA, been in that role for 20-odd years, sort of thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. But I need to get experience outside of large corporate. And so Out of the Box was a way to get experience in government, in not-for-profit, in small, medium enterprise, which, of course, we set off together and started that journey. And, of course, you then went on to work with one of those small businesses and I kept going. The business is now called Out of the Box Executive, and I really do focus very much on board performance and evaluation, certainly on strategy for organisations of all different sizes. I work for the Australian Institute of Company Directors and facilitate their course, and I do a number of programs for universities and so forth in amongst the boards that I work on. So that's a full deck. For me, I've been on, I think, 10 boards/committees in that 15 years and chaired six of them. And so it's been, you know, a really fantastic ride. I've been very, very lucky.
And I think one of the ones which I think is interesting is you and I did some work for an organisation called Barwon Water.
We did.
And I think it was around customer service and their policies. And I can remember rewriting some of their manuals.
Yes.
And here you are, chair of Barwon Water.
I know. It's funny because I also did, after your time, some work with Wannon Water, and that was in their customer experience area. So what would I know about water? I'm certainly not an engineer. And, you know, the board roles came up and I can remember asking about them and someone saying to me, look, you know, I've asked of a friend and there's really no point in putting up your hand. You know, they are very political appointments. Plus, you know, they didn't say this, but I felt it. You're probably the wrong gender. And at that time, there were a tiny percentage of female directors. And certainly, I don't think out of the 18 water corporations, there was a single female managing director, which, of course, has changed quite a bit since, and rightly so. And the sector's better because of it.
Can I just ask a question? Go back to Barwon Water and remember that our audience is primarily business owners. Now, if I went and asked somebody in this region, what benefit to your business is Barwon Water?
Mm.
And I would suggest I wouldn't get an answer.
Mm.
Or I'd get a garbled answer.
Mm.
So from your point of view, why should business owners get to understand what Barwon Water is about and its place in, I guess, in the business world, but in society in general and what it does for the community. So you got any sort of thoughts on how you'd approach that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question because I'm really pleased to talk about this. When I started in Barwon Water, and I've been there just over 7 years now, and with strategy being my background, one of the questions we asked ourselves as a board and our new CEO or MD at the time was why? You know, why should water corporations matter to the regions that they serve? And we did a really big sort of deep dive. We had a futurist. We did the work of Simon Sinek, so understanding your why. You know, we had some really deliberate, deeply focused discussions around why we exist. And what we came up with is we exist to enable regional prosperity. And in many ways, when you think about taps and toilets, it's a bit like being a good referee. You don't really know they're there, right? It's only when they're doing a bad job that everybody gets, you know, antsy about it. And so, you know, yes, we can do a good job and no one will know that we're there. But actually, you know, we have a really big impact in the region and we spend multi-millions of dollars, in fact, hundreds of millions of dollars over, you know, a pricing period, which is 5 years. In fact, this next pricing period, we're looking to spend something like $650 million. And so there are many ways that we can impact our region. And part of that is about how we attract capability into the region. So we now have a wholly owned subsidiary business that has all sorts of diverse workers that deliver services, A, for Bar and Water, but B, for the wider community and businesses. And that builds local jobs and builds local capacity. We have all sorts of hardship programs which enables people to be able to pay their bills. We, of course, have traineeship programs. We're a sponsor of Closing the Gap with our Indigenous partners. We have traditional owner partnerships which yield some incredible results for both themselves and ourselves when we actually walk together and look at ways that we can care for country. And of course, we are now no longer, with that mandate in mind, enabling regional prosperity, we are no longer, and I'll say it tongue in cheek, just taps and toilets. We are in the energy business. We are in the circular economy business. We're in the waste business. We actually do some terrific things when it comes to land development and enabling businesses to do their business more easily. So there's lots of good reasons why businesses should care about what Bar and Water does, and there's lots of good reasons why we care about business owners and everybody else in our community.
Yeah, because you're running a restaurant or a coffee shop, you turn on the tap, out comes water.
There it is.
And you start yelling.
Yeah, exactly.
And
right.
In fact, I know that you're making moves in the sustainability area, or Mark and I both do, because we know your employee who was actually running it.
Yes.
Quite well.
Yes, indeed.
Don't we?
We do. And your connection with the Wadawurrung's fantastic because the rejuvenation of the air under the aqueduct sitting around.
Yep.
Again, it's probably one of Geelong's little secrets. People really don't know it's there, but it is there.
It is there. It's a beautiful site.
Beautiful spot. And then you're also working on the ex-water reserve up at the back of Wallington.
Correct.
And turning that into a community asset as well.
Yeah, indeed.
So, very cool.
And there's also the return of land in Bostock where our traditional owners are looking to regenerate that. They're also running a nursery on it of Indigenous plants. So there's some really profound things happening that are having a material difference.
That's very good. So let's touch on Business in Heels. We haven't mentioned Business in Heels.
Yes.
Which was another little venture you got involved in.
Yes,
so
indeed.
Tell us how you got into that.
Yeah, so Business in Heels, and I should declare I'm no longer a director. I stepped out of that about 18 months ago, but still an ambassador for and a friend of Business in Heels. But again, a target relationship through Lisa Sweeney, who is the CEO and a very dear friend of many years, too many to mention. And so Business in Heels, again, was around how do we, you know, we've had a really wonderful career, which many women don't have the opportunity to have. And so how is it that we can actually help other women, whether they are in small business, in government, or their own business or in corporate, to really empower themselves to grow in any way, to succeed in any way that they choose to do so. And so we started off really more so as a networking business, but that business has, of course, grown quite substantially and does all sorts of things. Certainly it It commenced its inaugural Gender Equity Awards at the Crown last year, which was a really big deal. They do professional mentoring inside businesses as well and have all sorts of programs that women can attach themselves to and businesses can attach themselves to help their women in the organisations.
So it's grown rapidly.
It's grown rapidly, and Lisa is doing a tremendous job. And
we need to add Lisa. I've got Lisa down as one of our potential guests, so we must chat to Lisa because it's a good story.
Is it a membership organisation? How does the structure of it work?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways that you can be involved. You know, the very light touch through, you know, joining the website. And there are different levels of membership, but the membership is certainly not just pay and, you know, support. It's about paying and getting some really terrific value-add services that go with that. So I definitely encourage people to jump on the website, businessandheels.com.
Good. So 5 years' time, where do you see yourself?
Yeah, that's interesting because my biggest challenge is trying not to be too busy and working 6 days a week, which, of course, I have trouble saying yes. Because I literally bounce out of bed most mornings thinking, who am I going to meet and how, you know, how can I help? And so say yes to too many things to fit into the day. So in 5 years' time, I hope that I am still able to contribute on boards. And certainly, you know, some of those will be paid and others not. I'm very happy to lend my time to areas that matter in society. And certainly ESG is a big passionate piece for me. And I would certainly still like to be contributing with the Australian Institute of Company Directors from the perspective that one of the things that I think is really important is helping contemporary mindsetted directors. So people who understand society's expectations, it's not about not being commercial. Clearly, we need to be commercial. It's a ticket to the game. And, you know, gone are the days where boardrooms are dark rooms with men in black suits. And I hope that I can continue to open the eyes and get people to look up in that space, as well as, you know, all of the other technical governance pieces that come along with it.
Excellent. So one last little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If people listening want to get in touch with you to talk about the work you do in out-of-the-box executive, in board roles, board assessments, etc.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Well, they can either phone me, link in with me, or email me on plum.joe@gmail.com.
Excellent. So, Joe, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I could come back and we could have another session on the intricacies of being a board member, but the issues that you face in making decisions.
Yes.
I've got some great case studies, one in my pocket right now, but that's for another date. Thank you for coming along today and good luck for the future.
Yeah, absolute privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you.